Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to visit with the VESE chapter of the AUSA and learn about the Veterans Resilience Project. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
This week marks the anniversary of the death of a great leader. General Vang Pao will be known in history books as a charismatic commander of the Secret Army who fought alongside the Americans in the Vietnam War. Even more memorable than his many wartime heroics, General Vang Pao was passionate about improving the lives of Hmong people. Throughout the Vietnam War, he was instrumental in building schoolhouses and establishing health clinics in remote Hmong villages in Laos. He also opened the door for gender equality by insisting that female students be recruited to fill the nurse troop. General Vang Pao established the first ever teacher training program for Hmong students. It created a pool of qualified teachers who were dispersed throughout the countryside. In America, some 35 years after most Hmong fled war-torn Laos, General Vang Pao's leadership and influence never disappeared. He was instrumental in helping to pass the Hmong Veterans Naturalization Act of 2000. It directly helped to elect Hmong Americans into key political offices, giving them representation in their new country. General Vang Pao lived a full life dedicated to making the lives of the Hmong and all Americans better.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is a multiple-time guest on Minnesota Military Radio is a gentleman by the name Don Kerr. Don? Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here again.
Don, I know you're a retired colonel. Can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
Sure, Tom. I served in the Minnesota National Guard and on active duty in the United States Army starting in October of 1979 when I enlisted and attended basic training in 80. Went on active duty for a few years and came back and retired in 2004. Which now is coming up on 8 years next month, which seems unbelievably short. I can't believe it's been that long, but there it is. During that time, I served mostly in the Minnesota National Guard. I commanded the 2nd Battalion of the 136th Infantry up in the northwest part of the state, worked in the recruiting command, and also served in the division staff as the operations officer and later as the chief of staff. And then my last job before I retired, I was the director of plans and policy for the Minnesota National Guard. And after I retired, was hired by the Department of Military Affairs, which is the state agency that oversees the National Guard, as a planner and currently serve as the executive director. So I work for General Nash as a senior civilian executive in the state agency portion of the National Guard.
Sounds like quite a career, sir, and a pretty good position now. But today you're here as the president of the local VESE chapter of the AUSA. Can you tell us what that's about?
I sure can, Tom. So the Association of the United States Army was established by the Congress in 1950 to represent the interests of the Army as a non-military organization. So it's a recognized military service organization, and we basically serve as the voice of the Army and support for soldiers nationwide. There are over 100 chapters. The VESE chapter is responsible for all of the geography of Minnesota, plus two counties in Wisconsin, and occasionally we delve into the claimed territory in North Dakota and South Dakota from time to time. But we have about 1,000 members, actually about 900 members right now. That's something I'd like to talk to your listeners about as we get later in the show. Above our mandatory minimum that they'd like to have in the chapter, but less than I'd like to have in the chapter for the things that we do. And here in this area, we do a number of things. We do some community outreach activities, but really we support our ROTC, that's the Reserve Officer Training Corps detachments, to help give them better quality experiences to prepare them to be better Army officers when they move into that realm of their lives. And we also support veterans in our communities and the service members' families here.
We're speaking with Don Kerr, the president of the VESE chapter of the AUSA on Minnesota Military Radio. And Don, before we move on, that chapter is named after a brilliant, wonderful Minnesotan, the 10th chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Jack VESE.
Yes, sir. And General VESE is the only soldier who went all the way from private E1 all the way through all the available enlisted ranks and then was commissioned to second lieutenant and went all the way through the commissioned officer ranks all the way to four-star general as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And General VESE is a great American hero. He was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Reagan administration, and he's still alive and kicking and lives here in Minnesota. In fact, went with General Nash to visit him before the holiday season. He wishes all the members of the chapter and all of your listeners, I'm sure, a happy holiday season and best wishes for the new year.
Well, we've had him on the show, and he's a national treasure, and he's got a terrific memory about an awful lot of things that he saw while he was in the military. Don, want to talk to you a little bit. The Christmas season, the holiday season is just over. That's a busy time of year for the chapter.
Very busy time for the chapter. Two of the biggest activities that we do annually, our chapter sponsors the Toys for Military Kids campaign. You may have seen some of those collection containers around places in the metropolitan area. We take toys that are donated and provide them at Christmas parties for military reserve units, Guard and Reserve, here in Minnesota. And also to families in need, military families in need. And this year, we just wrapped up our toy drive and had a great year. We actually participated in 39 military unit Christmas parties around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area and, to a smaller extent, outstate. And also were able to help 23 families who were in need to give them a better Christmas and, make it a better holiday season. The other key event that we do along those lines is we sponsor a party for the patients that are in the Minneapolis VA polytrauma unit. And that's a very moving event that we do. It really provides a gift bag to those folks who are in the hospital. But the bigger thing is not so much the gifts that are for them, but it gives them an opportunity to re-gift some of the things that we give them because they don't have much of an opportunity to participate in the Christmas season because they can't get out and shop. It really gives them an opportunity to do a gift exchange with their families. And as we all know, giving is the bigger part of the Christmas season. And it allows them to participate in that way. And really an important thing that we do from the chapter during the Christmas season.
And for our listeners, if you want to learn more about Toys for Military Kids, it's Toys, the number four, Military Kids. Go to Minnesota Military Radio and just type that in up in the search engine. We've had Mike Clark and Les Hansen on the show each year, every fall, to talk about their efforts and what a great job they're doing on behalf of the chapter and good work done.
Yeah, and Tom, two things back to you. First of all, thanks so much for your support of that program. I know a lot of what they do, they couldn't do without your support. In fact, we know we got some direct contributions following the radio show that they wouldn't have received otherwise. And the other thing I wanted to really kind of recognize you for was to congratulate you on the award that General Nash gave you recently, that Distinguished Civilian Service Award. I can't think of anyone more deserving than you. So congratulations on the receipt of that award, and, thanks for your support of the VESE chapter as well.
Well, thanks, Don. It's my pleasure. And the Adjutant General really surprised me last week. I had no idea what was going on, so that was kind of fun. What else are you up to over the holidays, and what are you looking forward to in 2016 for your chapter?
Well, we're going to work really hard to make sure that we do the best we can to communicate the Army's message to the people of Minnesota. And we know that the Commission on the Future of the Army, you may or may not know about that, but a couple of years ago, the Congress mandated that a commission be established to look at the structure of the Army moving forward. And that commission is, by law, has to report to the Congress on the 1st of February, which is just a couple weeks away now. We had the privilege of hosting the chair of that committee at our chapter, actually, last February meeting. General Carter Hamm, who had not yet been appointed as the chair, came to visit our chapter here in Minnesota and saw what we were doing in VESE, and then went back out and about a week later was appointed the chair of the commission. So we're very interested in seeing what the results are of the commission's meetings. They also met with Governor Dayton and with General Nash here in Minnesota after they were in full session. And we're going to try to communicate the findings and the outcomes and see where the Army is going to go as far as which of those recommendations they're going to take up and move forward with and look at what the impact of Minnesota will be of those recommendations and changes.
Don, we've got about a minute before we have to go to break. You were going to tell us about membership. You're looking for some new members. Who's eligible to join, and
Tom,
what's your local mission?
Just had great news. AUSA National, we had a very complicated fee structure, and one of the changes that our new director of membership, Lieutenant General retired Patricia McQuistian, who also has a Minnesota connection, they simplified the rate structure, and it's much easier to join now. You can do it online at AUSA.org. It's a flat rate of $30 for 2 years, and that includes a subscription to Army Magazine, $50 for 5 years, and I think a life membership is $300. For our junior soldiers and ROTC cadets, the rate is much lower. That's $10 for a two-year membership. That's without the magazine, though, so that's not quite as good a deal, but we're really happy about that, and we really could use people who are interested in what the Army does and how the Army works in Minnesota to join our chapter. and get that membership up. I'd like to get another 100 members, if I could, get us up to that 1,000 member mark.
And your website?
www.ausa.org.
AUSA.org. Go there, visit it. Come out to one of the monthly meetings. You can meet Don Kerr and find out all the great things they do at the Vesey chapter of the AUSA. Don, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about that word that you and I talk about every once in a while. It's called sequestration. And I didn't just cuss, Don. No cussing on this show.
I can hardly wait, Don.
This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be back with Don Kerr in just a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been visiting with Don Kerr, a retired colonel and the president of the local Vesey chapter of the AUSA. And Don, when we went to break, we were talking a little bit about you've got some new membership rules, and it's easy to join and cheap, and we need new members. So if you're interested in helping veterans and helping out the AUSA, go to AUSA.org and go to one of the meetings and meet Don, and it's a great way to volunteer and spend some time.
And Tom, let me just clarify, you don't need to be a member of the military or the Army or an Army family to join AUSA. Any patriotic civilian is welcome to join AUSA and find out about what's happening in the Army.
And even let Air Force guys like me.
Even retired Air Force guys. Members of a paramilitary service.
There we go. And there's a subchapter for veteran-owned businesses that's coming along really nice.
There is indeed, and our veteran-owned business subchapter is going to run another major event in the fall, probably with the support of a couple of our sponsors to try to do what we can to educate veterans about how they can become businessmen and women in Minnesota, and what the kind of the undercurrent of what they need to know to do that, some of the insider baseball stuff about becoming a veteran-owned business.
And we held an event last year, and we taped a show from the event that's going to be aired on April 21st on this network, the Minnesota Military Radio Network, so you can find out all about what happens at those events, and maybe then you can join and come down to this year's event. Don, I want to go to national. You've got your local chapter, but you get a lot of information from the AUSA National about legislative things and what all comes in there.
We do quite a bit, so that the president of AUSA National is a guy named Gordon A. Sullivan. He's a retired general officer. He was the chief of staff of the Army for a time, and I apologize to the general. I don't remember where he was in the sequence, but he also was the commanding general of the 1st Infantry Division way back when he was only a mere major general. And I, as a captain, served for him when he was in the Big Red One, so we have a little bit of a tie going way back. But General Sullivan does a lot of work with our congressional leaders and with the leaders of other veteran service organizations and military service organizations to influence the Congress to make sure that we're protecting the rights and the benefits that are available and that our service members earn. And that benefit package is incredibly important, and it's something that service members who are serving often don't think about it very much because most of them serve very selflessly, and they don't worry about the future in a lot of cases. And there needs to be somebody looking out for our service members as they're off putting themselves in harm's way to defend our way of life. And our association and other associations do that. And so we get a lot of guidance from General Sullivan. We get periodic updates about what's new in the Capitol and what areas of concern there are, and also some good insight as to what's going on inside the Army.
We're speaking with Don Kerr, president of the Vesey chapter of the AUSA on Minnesota Military Radio. Don, I want to get into that naughty word that we mentioned at the end of the first segment, sequestration. Correct me if I'm wrong, but some years ago, Congress passed a law that's referred to as sequestration that essentially cut $1 trillion from the budget over a period of 10 years, $100 billion per year, and half of that comes out of the Department of Defense, and the other half comes out of non-defense spending. And when that first came in, I think none of the congressmen ever thought it would go into effect, but it did because there was no budget. And those first couple of years, there were some layoffs. There were some furloughs, and it really adversely affected the military. Now, the last couple of years, we've had a budget, so we were okay, and the Congress just passed the budget that goes out another 2 years, but there's a hangover. There's about 4 years of that still hanging out there, isn't there? Am I correct on all that?
That's exactly right, Tom. So the Budget Control Act of 2011 is the law that we're talking about that imposed sequestration. The law was actually input as something that would be too terrible to live through, And they used it, the Congress thought at the time, they said they were putting it in because it will force all of us to come to agreement. Unfortunately, their plan didn't work. They weren't scared enough of sequestration to actually fix the problems, and so sequestration went into effect. But it has been effectively pushed back in as you've stated, two cycles. So we had a two-year relief, and we have another two-year relief now. That's really good news. The National Defense Authorization Act that passed in December was signed into law. Fixes sequestration for fiscal year 2016 that we're currently in and 2017. So that gets us through September of 2017. Although the numbers are pretty good for the military in 2016, there's a pretty significant reduction that still comes into effect, though not as bad as sequestration would have been for 2017. So we still have some concerns moving forward, and they're still not out of the woods. There's still several years left on the threat of sequestration. I believe it runs out to 2022. It was originally supposed to go into effect in 2012. So,
now, Don, I read that there's an article in a Wall Street Journal this week that says the Navy is too small at 272 ships, and we hear about the active duty Army being cut back and being cut back further, and we hear and we read about the impact on that cutting back active duty is going to have on the National Guard and the Reserve. Sequestration still out there. What's the impact on the military, and what's the impact here at home in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, Tom, and even with those stays of the implementation, there still have been dramatic reductions in the size of the Army and in the dollars available for Army training and in all the other service components as well. You mentioned the Navy article. It's very, very timely and prescient. But the Army is trying to look at how we can react to this. Much of the press has talked about how much the cuts are in the active component of the Army, and that's a big deal because they're down from a peak of 553,000 down to 490,000 now and on their way to 470,000. Those numbers all seem a little bit abstract, and you can assume that, well, we're not fighting the war in Iraq and Afghanistan anymore. But, well, number one, we kind of are. Although we don't have a large troop deployment there, we have to be ready to do that. And we still have threats that are developing all over the world that still could require ground forces. And the bigger issue from my perspective is not so much what we're actually doing, but what we're prepared to do. And something that goes a little unnoticed is during the entire time that we were fighting the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, the state of training for major military combat operations, conventional operations, actually was reduced somewhat because we're training specifically for the fights in Iraq and Afghanistan. And now, as we're in this kind of interwar era, finding the money to do the training that the Army needs to do to be proficient in those tasks has been very difficult. And the problem is these aren't things that we can just go out and do in a short period of time. We're talking about training soldiers to perform at all levels through their career, and you need experiences as a lieutenant and as a captain and as a sergeant and as a staff sergeant that you can't go up and make those up once you've been promoted out of that opportunity to learn those things. And some of the things that we're looking at about how this will impact the reserve component specifically, even as the active Army goes south, the chief of staff of the Army is recognizing that he has to use the reserve components more than he did in the past. That means he's going to have to pay for more readiness in the reserve components, and he understands that. But it also means that our employers are going to have to survive with their members of the reserve component away at training more frequently than perhaps they were even during the war years. Because during the war, you would pretty much be called up for a period of time, might be a year, might be 18 months, might be 2 years. But your training between deployments was still pretty much 1 week in a month and 2 weeks a year. Now we're looking at a potential change to buy more readiness in the reserve component. That means more availability for training. And that means we're sending our soldiers off for training more frequently. So there will be impacts, and I guess it's important that we understand that we have to continue to make those investments in training. And if we can't make them in the active component because they don't exist, then we have to make those investments in the reserve component.
And as we cut back on active duty, then you're putting more and more pressure on the Guard and Reserve. And then there's more pressure to have a good readiness status in case you are called up. Don, is the Congress sending the right signal to the world? Are we saying we're cutting our military, we're cutting our Navy, we're cutting our Army? Does that send the right signal saying that we're here, we're powerful, we're ready to do our jobs?
Well, I think there are a couple of aspects to that. First of all, it should be clear that we still have a very powerful Army, a very powerful armed forces. I still believe the best in the world by a wide margin. But there is a question about how thin you can stretch it. And I think it's not unrealistic to believe that Vladimir Putin and the other world leaders who may not be directly aligned with the United States understand that there's risk that the United States is taking as we take risk and not maintaining the appropriate level of readiness for the threats that we have in the world. And clearly the world is not a safer place now than it was 4 years ago. There are more unknowns out there and more potential areas of conflict than we've seen for, I don't know if we've ever seen this many.
Don, we're just about out of time. What can our listeners do to help solve some of these problems?
Well, number one, they need to keep their elected officials informed that they're interested in this and that they are concerned, if they are concerned, as I am, about the future and what our role needs to be in defending ourselves, not on our shores, but perhaps in places where it's much more comfortable for us to defend ourselves.
So, like I've said on this show before, as host of the show and a civilian, get on the horn and talk to your elected officials in Congress and tell them, do something about sequestration, and let's keep our military strong so that the deterrent effect is there and so that we're ready if something bad happens.
That's right.
Don, thanks for joining us again.
Thanks, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
That was the president of the local VESE chapter of the AUSA, Don Kerr, on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about the Veterans Resilience Project. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
I'd like to take a minute to thank the various veteran service organizations, legislators, and many others for all of the continued support in 2015. Overall, the department was successful in accomplishing important and critical tasks over the past year. I am confident that 2016 will be just as successful. Together, we have worked to build better lives for our veterans and their families. I am proud of the work we've done, but there is still a great deal of work to accomplish in serving Minnesota veterans. I am confident the department is up to the challenge. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is proud to assist our nation's heroes, and on behalf of the department, I thank all of you for your continued support.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now for I don't know how many times he's been on the show is Jim Finley, who's the Director of Veterans Employment Programs at Minnesota DEED, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Right, Jim?
Correct.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom.
You haven't been on for a while.
It has been a while. I've missed you.
You're a sick man, Jim. And you brought somebody with you today.
I did.
And we're going to talk about the Veterans Resilience Project. Who'd you bring with you?
All right. Mr. Paul Riedner. Paul's the executive director for the Veterans Resilience Project. And this is something that I've become involved with recently as it pertains to employment and healthy veterans.
And Paul, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I understand you were in the Army.
Yeah, that's right. I was a deep-sea diver in the Army.
The Army has deep-sea divers.
Yeah, we certainly do.
Didn't know that, Jim. We learn something new every day, don't we?
They wouldn't even let me near the beach.
I believe that, too.
Actually, we tried to get on the job when 35W Bridge collapsed, but the Navy had some officers that outranked our top guys, and we didn't come home for it.
I'll bet they'd love to have you there.
I would like that. You know, it's meaningful work wherever you're doing in the military. But to do, I would have loved to come back home and help out.
So you're a native Minnesotan?
Yeah, I'm from Red Wing, Minnesota.
All right. Well, welcome back. Tell me, what is the Veterans Resilience Project, and how did you get involved?
Yeah. So it started out. Elaine Wynn is a psychologist and EMDR therapist. She's the founder. And back as early as 05, actually, she started seeing the need to use what she uses in a clinical setting with civilians to help the veteran population overcome trauma, whatever that may be. So she started setting up a pilot project 2012 to 2014, got some funding for it, set up a network of EMDR therapists, independent practitioners all across the state of Minnesota.
EMDR.
EMDR, yeah.
What is that?
So that's it's a trauma therapy that it stands for eye movement. Oh, wait, there's no acronym policy. Dang it.
Eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing.
You got it.
So what does that really mean?
Yeah, so it's a way of using the eyes, sort of like in your when you're dreaming, right, when you're sleeping.
Like the rapid eye
movement? The rapid eye movement, yeah. Something's happening between the eyes and the brain that sort of integrates experiences into your mind and your memory. And so sort of by accident, this thing was found out that the eyes are such a crucial part of this thing that they utilize that to help someone reprocess an event that is traumatic and brings back all the emotions and all the sensory information that was present in that time when the traumatic event happened. So when you get them in a place where you can use your eyes and with the help of a coach or, you know, a counselor, then the brain can reprocess that event and properly take, you know, what's useful for your future and discard what's not useful.
Yeah, let's back up a minute. My understanding of REM sleep or a deep REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, is that's the part of your night where you're deepest in sleep and it's the most refreshing to the body so that you're ready for the next day. Now, are you saying that this EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, you can cause that to happen to help resolve trauma issues or post-traumatic stress issues?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the, you know, one of the amazing things about this therapy is that from my understanding and what I try to tell when I try to explain it to a veteran is that it uses the intelligence of the body, right? Like our body has memory. When I learned how to play basketball, when I shoot free throws, I don't think about it. My body, my muscles remember that muscle memory. So there's other sorts of intelligence that the body has that we can utilize to help the mind heal itself.
So what kind of process do you go through to bring this about?
It starts off with resources, which is just, you know, mindfulness, you know, being able to listen to your body and listen to your level of anxiety, your emotions, these sorts of things, and being able to calm yourself down so that once this therapy starts, you have more tools in your toolbox for dealing with this memory that's going to come with a lot of associated, emotional components to it. So, you know, that's a process. It's a 1-hour session with a therapist, and we offer up to 12 sessions. Most people with one trauma, that's the sort of source of their present issues, don't need more than 3 or 4 sessions. It's really powerful. And someone who has multiple traumatic events, are going to have to get up into the 7 to 8 session range. But we're really talking about a very short window of time where huge gains are made for a veteran to get to the point where they're not bothered by those events like they are now.
We're speaking with Jim Finley and Paul Reitner about the Veteran Resilience Project on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Jim, this sounds like an alternative methodology to help veterans with some issues. Most of the veterans that we talk to on this show, and of course the doctors from the VA Medical Center, they have protocols they go through and so forth. But
right. This
is an alternative method that might supplement or help it, deal it with
is.
Those issues?
It is. I think, you know, with a lot of, treatments for a variety of maladies, whatever they may be, there's different ways to treat it. Some work with some people. Other modalities work with other people. And this is the same thing. The interesting thing about this is the success rate for EMDR seems to be very good. Initial numbers are at least at where numbers from other treatments used in the past for PTS have been. So I think practitioners in the field are taking a really hard look at this and trying to, you know, basically, as Paul indicated, make their own decision if it's something that they want to get involved in. We have practitioners across the state that are trained and licensed to work with this eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. So if a veteran presents himself and needs help, we've got a way to refer him to that.
And Paul, how did you become acquainted with this EMDR process? You weren't one of the patients, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was recruited to be on the board. I've been working with this community since I got home. I went to business school and I was sort of going through this process of reintegration. And I found that using art was the best way for me to find some peace and start to work through some of those issues. And so, I just got to know some of the people in this community, and they invited me to be on the board, and I just sort of took to it. I work as an independent consultant, so I'm a problem solver, and I like taking on new issues. And this is one that, you know, frankly, like this, what this organization has done has proven that this works. And as a veteran, I really can't sit on my hands when there's something that can help every single veteran out there without a doubt. You know, and I'm confident in saying that. So I want veterans to know that PTSD doesn't have to be something to just grin and bear it. Like, we can help you.
Now, is this process documented? How many veterans have you helped?
Our pilot project had 30 veterans, and 74% of them don't qualify as having PTSD, but all of them have reduced symptoms.
100% of them have reduced symptoms.
Absolutely.
So you've got some initial returns that say that this really works.
Yeah, and actually, this is something that's new to the United States, sort of, and over 2 million people have been helped by EMDR worldwide get over trauma. So if there's a natural disaster, we send EMDR therapists to go help those populations. But why aren't we doing that for the veterans that bring war home with them back into our communities? We could easily be doing that.
Well, it sounds like a pretty good goal. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Veterans Resilience Project. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Jim Finley and Paul Reitner about the Veterans Resilience Project, which has to do with a procedure called EMDR, Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. And Paul, can you just review for us, what do you use this for, and what type of therapies this is helpful with?
Yeah, I mean, it's a trauma therapy, but it's sort of like resilience training, because it teaches you how to take something in your past, process it, and then move forward, you know, to make a plan for your future, how you'd rather be. And it works on combat stress, PTSD, moral injury, which is becoming something that we're understanding is underneath almost a majority of the depression, suicide, homelessness, something that the community is involved in. And then also military sexual trauma. It can be used on pain and addiction. So it's really a powerful therapy.
So this is a method by which you can take that issue, that problem out, take a look at it, understand it, deal with it, put it behind you, move on.
Exactly.
Which is pretty valuable, because the rest of your life can be anything you want to make it.
Yeah, and especially as a veteran, I mean, I think there's not too many communities that have that foundation of values, you know, and that experience of doing something in the selfless service, you know, all the things that we go through in the service. And then if you have that obstacle, like some sort of trauma or some sort of barrier, you know, just getting that person through to the other side almost always comes with a whole lot of gratitude and payback, you know, giving back once that veteran gets through to the other side, because it's just, that's the nature of who we are. We go face the fire because it helps other people. And so we're just making sure that we're going to do that for the people that we sent to war. And I think it's our community's responsibility, and we have something that works. So we're going to go and talk to the business community and say, hey, like, if you also stand by our responsibility to our veterans, let's collaborate. Let's do this thing. For $16 million, we can go treat 7,500 veterans who, you know, served in Iraq or Afghanistan with untreated PTSD. That's a lot of people in Minnesota that we can help right now. And if you want to get involved, you can go to resiliencemn.org. See our website, you know, send a note to us at info@resiliencemn.org. And then also look for a podcast that we're making called Resilience MN, where we tell stories of guys like us sitting around a table telling, what's your experience, you know, going to the military, or what was your experience like coming back into the community when, you know, you may have that sort of separation from those that you love. before the military, and then something happens, right, where it sort of changes.
Now, Jim, I want to be careful here. Now, you've dealt with the veterans and getting them employment for decades.
Right.
And we've had some of the VA doctors on the show that did the ring study, which proved that when our Red Bulls were deployed and came home, a vast majority of them came home changed, but ready to go to work. And a small percentage of them had some issues.
Right.
But this would be a way to help with that small percentage that have those issues.
Right, right. It's interesting. Traditionally, forever, historically, veterans have come back to be leaders in their communities and their churches and their business community. So this is not anything different. And the ring study was valuable, priceless, in as much as it is some hard data that kind of counters what some of the popular media want everybody to believe about the damaged veterans coming back from war. It's just not accurate.
I mean, we've proven it's a small percentage.
That's right. Yeah.
And we know how to help them. And this is just another
exactly.
resource to help those veterans deal with the things they've seen and done and gone through in their
exactly.
in their combat experience.
Exactly.
Paul, we just got about 30 seconds left. Where do they go for more information?
Yeah, you can go to our website at resiliencemn.org. You can email us at info@resiliencemn.org. Or you can also call if you're a veteran or anyone that wants to get involved. You can call 612-222. is this the part where we say cut?
Josh will edit this down and fix it.
Where's my number? I'll just scratch the number.
We'll throw out the number part.
Okay. Yeah, and also look for the podcast that's going to be coming out with Alive and Social's podcast network in the next month.
One last time, your website?
Yeah, it's www.resiliencemn.org.
Gentlemen, thanks for coming and visiting us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Jim Finley and Paul Reitner from the Veterans Resilience Project on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, Happy New Year 2016 already.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, Tom. It's great to be with you. And wow, where'd 2015 go?
Went quick, didn't it?
It sure did. Absolutely, it did.
Sergeant Major, every time you come on, or not every time, but quite often we talk about your list of priorities within the Minnesota National Guard. Is there anything new that you're going to focus on or emphasize in 2016?
Yeah, you know, we covered some of those things the last time we spoke, and one thing that we didn't get to was the fact that all of the jobs that we now have will be open to females, which, of course, previously wasn't the case. And so one of the focuses that we're going to have going into 2016 here is to figure out how we start filling a lot of these positions with females so that we can continue to promote the diversity of our organization, which, as you know, is one of our organizational goals.
Sergeant Major, I know that we've talked quite often about the 13,000 soldiers and airmen in the Minnesota National Guard, and I know it's your part of your responsibilities to communicate with them on the focuses and the priorities. How do you go about doing that?
Well, that's a great question, and I'll tell you what, Tom, that's a difficult task to tackle. Throughout 2015, my first year of my tenure, I did my best to get out and do in-person visits with every single unit within the Minnesota National Guard. And quite honestly, I mean, that's not something that I can sustain. We just have so many people that we've got to get with. And then there's that big time lag in between each unit visit because, of course, when I'm here during the week, soldiers and airmen, they're working on the weekend. So, you know, that's the prime time to meet up with our soldiers and airmen. So, you know, I have my conventional methods, of course, you know, emailing. We use some collaboration sites. But the things that I think really are the big money makers, in addition to face-to-face with each individual unit, is something that we do quarterly. We have a quarterly readiness conference, and that's for the senior leaders in the state. That's not just for the enlisted. That's our officers. It's actually a conference that the Adjutant General pulls in all of the commanders to. And I piggyback with that to get together with all of my command sergeants, majors, and command chiefs. And we do that quarterly. And then annually, Tom, what I do is I bring in all of my first sergeants, command sergeants, majors from the Army side, the command chiefs, first sergeants from the air side. And we have about a day and a half, a two-day conference up at Camp Ripley. And that's where we talk about basically kind of like a state of the state. You know, here's where we're at. Here's where we're going. We reemphasize organizational goals. And then we charge those senior leaders to bring that information, to bring that guidance, if you will, back into their formation so that we can get everybody in the same sheet of music. And that's really the next best thing I can do next to having face-to-face visits with every soldier or airman at the unit level.
Sergeant Major, we just got about 30 seconds left. Anything you're looking forward to in the next quarter?
Well, things I'm looking forward to in the next quarter. You know, we're going to hit it hard here with our, you know, me and my initiatives, of course, keeping those things going on. I've got this conference coming up in January. That'll really set the stage for the rest of the year. And, yeah, we're just looking forward to getting into 2016 now that we're past the holidays and just keeping things moving.
Sergeant Major, I hope you have a great year, and I look forward to talking to you in a few more weeks.
Hey, I really appreciate it. And, of course, if anybody wants to keep track of other things we got going on, my Facebook page is always a good place to go as well. So I appreciate that. And, Tom, Happy New Year, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Don Kerr, Jim Finley, Paul Reitner, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Sheletow of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk to the Marine Corps League and we find out what the Goodman Group is doing for veterans. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.